Blog Talk Radio.
Sunbury Press Authors Interview. I'm Van Carter. This week I'm speaking with Sunbury Press author Lawrence Knorr about his book, Gettysburg Eddie, the story of Eddie Plank. And you better be a baseball fan because this is a baseball book, I'm telling you. And one of the things that amazed me was I had no idea that a lot of these famous people like Ty Cobb and Cy Young and Connie Mack, they were all the very beginning of the 20th century. I had no idea that baseball history was that deep, Lawrence.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned those fellows. Connie Mack actually was there at the beginning of the American League in 1901, and he was the founder of the Philadelphia Athletics. Of course, Ty Cobb came along a few years later, but Eddie Plank was also part of the very first athletics team in 1901, so one of the founders of the American League.
I feel kind of foolish because, you know, I've heard of Cy Young and Connie Mack and all of these people, and Eddie Plank to this day remains one of the most prolific southpaws in the game, and I had not heard of him before your book.
Yeah, it was kind of odd when I came upon him myself. I had always known about him, having been familiar with the lists of, you know, pitching wins and earn run average and sort of the statistical history. His name came up a bunch in the past, and I recently was looking at some things, thinking, oh, what's a good book to write? And had anybody done a Chief Bender biography? And found a couple of those, and then I looked at another Philadelphia Athletic, Eddie Plank, and I'm like, well, this guy's a Hall of Famer, and there's no biography about him.
Why well, there is now.
Is he forgotten? Yeah, well, there is now, yes. After all.
This book
but
is...
But you're right. You're right about him being forgotten, and for some reason kind of left in the past.
But this book is so complete and so thorough. I couldn't believe the detail. I believe that you covered, or at least touched upon, every game that he played from 1901 to 1918, didn't you?
Yeah, maybe I'm a little embarrassed to admit it, but because there had been no biography written about him, and because he passed away so many years ago, and The closest connection to him is his grandson, who I know personally, but his grandson never knew him. So there really wasn't a whole lot to pass on, at least anecdotally, from the family. So I went through his career and layered in that information, wanted to get a complete read on his career. And his career was actually very successful and a lot of success, a lot of interesting games, a lot of victories. So, you know, it also helped to get into the team's history and talk about the other players on the teams.
Well, one of the things that you did that you incorporated in the fabric of your storytelling that I think turned out to be extremely important, because otherwise we're just talking about, you know, and they went out and they took two games and then they lost a game and then some details of the game. And I mean, you incorporated a lot of at least the anecdotal stuff that you could find. And what I really liked was the historical breaks that you put in there, the Panama Canal being started, Roosevelt being shot, the Titanic, the hurricanes and the volcanoes where so many people died, the fire in New York. Every now and then, as you're reading through the, I mean, I guess they're kind of like a little attention getters that kind of keep you in the times. Not only is this stuff happening on the ball field, but it's happening during these times in history.
Yeah, you know, I, being someone who loves history, loves to write history, I think it's important that you put things in context, even sports, because it's, you know, it's a cultural experience. And understanding what was in the news that day, you know, for instance, when the Titanic was the big story, you know, and they're still playing baseball, or the, you know, putting in the historical context as far as when this was happening, what else was going on? Like, you know, his career starts, Eddie Plank's career starts around the time that Queen Victoria dies, and there's a new king in England. So that puts that in context. Or who was president at the time? And certainly some of the major events of history I mentioned, and then some of the obscure things that were still big events at the time, but maybe they aren't remembered so much now.
Well, that was a nice that's a nice touch that you put those in there. But I have to reiterate how surprised I was. I used to be a big baseball fan, and there's a whole story as to what stopped that. I was 16 years old, and they traded Duke Snyder, and I turned my back on the game. But, yeah. Well, I mean, I got hit over the head with a baseball bat in third grade over an argument between about Duke Snyder or Mickey Mantle, and then in 64, the Dodgers. The two teams that I paid the most attention to were the Dodgers and their arch enemies, the Giants, both New York teams, which were now playing on the West Coast.
Right.
And I knew all the statistics. So your story that, I mean, you know, you use all of the terminology that there is, you know, rather than they hit the base, well, they hit the bag, they hit the sack. You know, you use all of the various terminology, and again, I say to those who are paying any attention here is that if you're not a kind of a baseball aficionado to begin with, you're probably going to have trouble making it all the way through this book, because it's a baseball book.
Well, yeah, that's intentional, since he was a baseball player. But yeah, it you know, another way to look at it is it's an interesting read into one of the most successful teams at that time, the Philadelphia Athletics, and also during the what was called the dead ball era. So you get a sense of that. And, you know, the dead ball era was very heavy on pitching. So pitching performance was more important and also more prominent. And therefore, when writing it, I find myself talking more about the pitchers, who was pitching that day, who threw the shutout, who did this, who did that. And
what does that mean, dead ball?
Rotation. So the dead ball era was a period of baseball around that early 20th century time. It was before Babe Ruth came along as a prolific home run hitter. The game was played in a style of more base-to-base, small ball, hitting singles and doubles and stealing bases. And the pitchers also were allowed to use spitballs and other methods to try to batters. So the offense was a little bit less in that era. You find the pitchers dominating a little bit more. And so the scores were lower, essentially.
Was
the dead ball era.
Was it because of the way the balls were actually made? Or did the balls become produced differently later on?
Well, it might have been that. I don't know the exact history of, you know, the baseball changing as far as how it was constructed. But, you know, the way that a lot of baseball historians talk about it is the home run, hitting home runs was not seen as an objective until Babe Ruth comes along. And then he starts hitting, you know, dozens, if not 50 or 60 a year, and really taking, you know, the public by storm. Before that, the objective wasn't to hit the ball in the air. It was to hit the ball on the ground or hit line drives.
I see. So
the style of batting was a little bit different, too.
Would you say that maybe Ty Cobb was the first breakthrough as far as a real hitter?
Oh, no, definitely not. I mean, he was certainly a great hitter, but there were other great hitters before that. Cap Anson was a great hitter in the late 1800s, early 1900s. Just before Cobb, a guy named Napoleon Lajoie. He played with Eddie Plank and then played with the Phillies and then played with the Cleveland Spiders, which became the Cleveland Indians.
They were called the Cleveland Naps, weren't they, for his name?
Yeah. Yes, they were.
I thought that was kind of interesting. It took me a while to figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah, why do they call them the Naps? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they like to sleep in the afternoon. Well, because of Napoleon. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I was also I really had no real understanding of how old baseball really is, how long baseball has been around. But there was a fellow, according to something in your book, there was a fellow who played in the majors who had been wounded as a soldier in the Civil War.
Right. Right, because the Professional Baseball League started just after the Civil War. And the National League was started, I think, around 1870. I'll say 1876, around the time of the centennial. There had been professional baseball clubs before that, but they didn't have a really well-organized schedule. They might sort of barnstorm and play that way. But then it was organized into leagues around that time. So it really was a sport that took off in that industrial post-Civil War era and became our national sport. And so by the time you get to the early 1900s, it's a pretty mature organization, the National League, and other entrepreneurs are thinking, how can we make money with baseball? So they start a rival league called the American League. And that's where Connie Mack starts the A's team to rival the Philadelphia Phillies. You have the Philadelphia Athletics. You have two teams in Philadelphia. You mentioned New York. You have the team, the American League team called the Highlanders, which became the Yankees. In the National League, you had, of course, the Giants and the Dodgers. There were several teams in New York for quite a while.
Well, now the Dodgers The Dodgers weren't in your book anywhere, though. Had they shown up yet?
Well, I didn't mention them much because Eddie was he was always an American League player. Or he also played a bit in the Federal League, which was an outlaw or rival league for 2 years. So you don't hear a lot about the National League teams except for the World Series interactions. So I don't think the Dodgers and the Dodgers had a couple other nicknames back in those days. I'm not sure when they actually became the Dodgers, but I think they were the Superbas. I don't recall exactly, but I do know that I don't think that they were winning pennants at that time. So that's probably why you didn't hear much. Now the Giants, on the other hand, with John McGraw as the manager, very famous era for the Giants, and they were perennially contenders and faced the Philadelphia A's a number of times. In fact, the Giants ace pitcher Christy Mathewson went against Eddie Plank in the World Series a couple of times, and Mathewson usually beat Plank until 1913 when finally Eddie had his day and defeated Mathewson.
That was in the World Series.
Yeah, the Giants and the Athletics would battle in the World Series in that era.
Of course, now when Eddie Plank started playing in 1901, when he went pro and went to the Athletics, there was no World Series, was there?
That's right. The first World Series, if I'm not mistaken, was either 1902 or 1903. So that first year he played, there wasn't one. And then I think they had one, and then they skipped a year. And in fact, the year they skipped it, the Athletics won the American League pennant, but they couldn't agree to hold the World Series. And then it became a perennial thing after that. They just always did it. And the Athletics and Eddie's team went to the World Series, I think, 4 or 5 times in the span of 10 years.
Let's tell us a little bit specifically where Eddie Plank stands in the Hall of Fame regarding all of the other baseball players out there. He's still in some record books, isn't he?
Yeah, he still ranks pretty high. You know, obviously as time goes by, other players come along who, you know, who perform really well, and, you know, kind of adds to the, you know, the Hall of Fame grows and there's more players in the mix. But he still, I believe, is the top pitcher, left-hander, for shutouts in his career. He's one of the top pitchers in wins for a left-handed pitcher. He's the all-time winning pitcher for a Philadelphia pitcher. And I believe he's the all-time American League left-hander. So even after all these years, he's still coming up to the top of some lists, if not, you know, top 10. When he retired in 1917, he was ranked number one in wins in the American League. And it was some years later when Walter Johnson retired that Walter Johnson had passed him. But, you know, and when Eddie retired, he was the oldest player in the league, and he had also, you know, was leading in a number of statistical categories. So then, you know, the years go by and other people break his records. But
sure,
he has stood the test of time. And, you know, oddly enough, though, he's, like I had said at the beginning, and like you had mentioned, you know, he had been largely forgotten, not somebody that you think of. I think part of that is that the Philadelphia Athletics don't exist anymore. They're now the Oakland Athletics. So the Oakland fans don't think so much about the Philadelphia era of the team as much as they do the more recent history of that team.
Well, I'm sure the Giants and the Dodgers don't think much about New York either.
Right, right. And the people that lived in the East, in New York and Philadelphia, that were fans of those teams when they were there, they're mostly or just about all gone now. You have to be very old to remember, maybe not very, very old, but I'd say quite a bit of the fans have certainly passed on. And, you know, the teams leaving for the West Coast in the 50s, so that's now 60 years ago. I do know some people that were very young at the time when the teams left, and they lived in New York, and they still talk about us as if they had been betrayed. So I'm sure, you know, the Philadelphia Athletics fans probably felt the same way when that happened. But, you know, that was many years after Eddie Plank had played and retired.
I found it interesting that things seemed to be, and I don't know if other players were doing the same thing that Eddie was, but you would mention occasionally in your book that when the team would play 4 or 5 games at a location, and then as they were moving, as they headed back to either home or to another location to play a team, Eddie would just drop off and take a few days off at home.
Yeah, I think he had to earn that right. That was not typical. So some things to know about Eddie Plank that I picked up on was, you know, that he certainly was very trustworthy. Connie Mack described him as a son. And I think he honestly believed that and felt that, the relationship with Eddie Plank and Connie Mack was very close. And the other thing that I learned was Eddie wasn't just going home to see mom and dad. The newspapers would say that Eddie was home with his parents, but he was actually also going off to see Anna Cora Myers, his girlfriend, who was in the Gettysburg area, and he'd drop in to see her during the season too. So he would do it at opportune times when, you know, the train's coming back from maybe St. Louis, Chicago, Detroit, one of the Western teams, and he knew he wouldn't be pitching for 2 or 3 days. That was one of the advantages of being a starting pitcher is you're in a rotation and you're going to be used every 3 or 4 days back in those times. So he knew he could take a couple of days off and got permission to do so, I'd say 3 or 4 times a season, it seemed. At least that was noted. Yeah.
Well, you, I'm wondering how difficult this may have been for you to ferret all of this stuff out. Because as far as I'm concerned, nobody else is ever going to need to write a book about Gettysburg Eddie. Because I don't think you missed anything, but how difficult was it to find everything?
Well, we're very fortunate in these times that there's a site called Baseball Reference, which has every baseball game that's ever been played and recorded in the major leagues and quite a few of the minor league games. So, you know, that is something that I could layer in. Also, newspapers.com, great source to get, you know, all the box scores and write-ups and some of the anecdotal stuff, so I could layer that in. And it was tedious, and I had to go season by season, game by game, day by day. Essentially, I relived Eddie Plank's day-by-day life as much as I could reconstruct it. And, you know, what I really, really wanted to get to, I knew that getting the baseball statistics and the games and who he played against and all that was important, but also it was, you know, that was the easier stuff to uncover. The really interesting stuff is trying to get a sense of his personality. Who was Eddie Plank? How did he think? What did he worry about? What did he think about? What was he concerned about? What kind of a friend was he? What kind of a player was he? And I think I was able to build some, let's just say, construct some models or theories about that based on a lot of the things that I found. And you know, there was stuff written about him that was a lot of hyperbole, just people who revered his accomplishments. The newspaper writers would sometimes talk very highly of him and all that. I'm not talking about those stories, but more the local news here and there, and just some of the anecdotes you'd pick up on. And once you connect them and put them in sequence, you can kind of build a narrative out of it.
His hometown of Gettysburg sure loved him.
I'm sorry? Gettysburg?
His hometown of Gettysburg sure loved him.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, he was revered. I mean, I think he was the guy in Gettysburg for his lifetime. And everybody knew Eddie Plank. Everybody knew where he lived. People could drop by. He was very well connected with the community and just had a great, great name, great reputation. Now, one of the things that I thought was really fascinating about Eddie Plank was a lot of the players that he played with as a boy or as a young man in the local teams ended up his pallbearers when he passed away. And you would see that when he had his parties or events in between, or guys from the town that went out to see his games when he was playing professionally, he had a large group of friends, and they stuck with him, and he stuck with them. He belonged to a number of groups as well, the Masons, for instance, and some other local groups that he was very connected with. And I think those brotherhoods were there to support him, and you know, it seemed like when he made a friend, he kept the friend.
Yeah.
I didn't see anything where people were angry at him or, you know, any controversies, lawsuits,
no,
that kind of stuff. Nothing.
And he seemed to be very athletic too, because he was a shooter. It sounded like he was the best shooter around. He was a bowler. It sounded like he was the best bowler.
Yeah. Very competitive, especially with his brother Ira, and the Plank brothers were very athletic. Were probably the best athletes in town, and very competitive. Loved sports, loved hunting, loved about any kind of game, Eddie would want to master it. And, you know, even bowling on the off season, you know, or the skeet shooting that they would do, or the hunting trips that he'd go on. And you find these anecdotes and they kind of add his mystique.
One of the things that I appreciated about the way you were telling the story, though, Lawrence, is that you didn't just focus on Eddie. You named every player and their positions that he was playing with, and especially before he went pro, you stopped and gave those guys a little bit of history. You talked about where they were from, when they were born, what they ended up doing in life.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting to do because, you know, one thing I wanted to do with the book was really connect it to the Gettysburg community and Gettysburg Eddie. I mean, he had the nickname because he was from the town, but also because he was the town hero. And like I said, so many of those people that are mentioned as players early in his pre-professional career and his amateur career, they go on to, they show up numerous times later. So it's kind of like making a list of the cast, you know, who's this guy, who's that guy. Plus it helps connect to people who are alive today if they're doing genealogical research and say, well, my great-grandfather played with Eddie Plank. You know, and hopefully that sells a few books.
Yeah, well, you also had a lot of amusing anecdotes in there, and one of them that you've got to tell us about is stealing first base. That was crazy.
Oh, gosh, I'm not really remembering that story. I remember him stealing home.
Well,
they were trying to get the
pickoff throw so the guy on third could score. And he stole second base, and the catcher didn't bite. So on the next play, he stole back to first base to steal second again to try and get the...
I remember that now. Yeah, that was crazy. Just some of the weird stuff that they would try. You know, back in those days, maybe there wasn't quite as much... I mean, in today, when you watch the game, if you do, it's so... metrics oriented, and you see all kinds of shifts and things going on. It's very scientific almost. Back then, it was more creative and spontaneous. But yeah, that was a good story. One story I'll tell you that I really liked that was maybe a little bit funny, but really showed Eddie and how he appreciated his other players. There was a guy named Rube Waddell, who was a pretty crazy guy, and he was a teammate for a number of years. And there came a time when Rube Waddell was no longer with the A's and his career was on the downside, and he left baseball at a fairly young age. And then Waddell's on his deathbed. And that season, I think it was in spring training, Waddell was known for at times back when he was young, he would be showing off in an exhibition and he'd call in, you know, everybody from the field, and it'd just be him and the catcher, and he'd strike out the opposing team. He wouldn't need any fielders, and he was able to do this. Well, when Eddie Plank knew that Waddell was on his deathbed, he was in an exhibition game, and he did the same thing. So he called his players in, and in honor of Waddell, Eddie went ahead, and he struck out the opposing team, three batters, and without any fielders, and was able to do that. So it was a pretty amazing feat. There was another story that was kind of strange where he's at spring training down in Texas, and a Texas Ranger in a neighboring room in the hotel gets robbed, and Eddie takes off after the crook.
Right.
He's running down the street in his bedclothes and tackles the crook and saves this Texas Ranger's stuff. So, I mean, not even the cop could stop the robber. Eddie Plank had to, like, be a superhero. Go running in his pajamas down the street and tackle this guy. So, you know,
there's a lot of stuff in there. It's an interesting book, Lawrence, and I appreciate that you took as much time as it obviously took with the showing your bibliography and everything. You worked hard on this thing, and as I say, I just don't think that anybody's going to be able to come up with anything more, because I don't think you missed anything. But I appreciate you talking to us about it.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate talking about it.
All right. All right. Well, thanks a lot. It's Gettysburg Eddie, The Story of Eddie Plank. It's a book worth having, so you might want to grab that yourself. Definitely worth having. This has been the Author's Interview from Sunbury Press.